Okay, good morning. Hi, everyone. I'm Biju Hunt. I'm with the Sinai Urban Health Institute.
Can you explain how you presented that
one before? Oh, yes. Okay. So I'm going to present first on door-to-door outreach, and then my second presentation will be on the use of computer kiosks to target disadvantaged populations. So I just kind of switched the order there, and I will take a break in the middle to do questions about the first half of the presentation, which might also help me take a break from talking endlessly, and then I'll do the second presentation. But they really are, they sort of flow well together. There's a lot of background in the first one. Okay, so I'm gonna start today providing some background and motivation for the Helping Her Live project. HHL is Helping Her Live. I'll just mostly refer to it as HHL. I'll discuss the project model, give an overview of the various outreach strategies we use. I'll introduce outreach evaluation metrics we've developed to assess productivity of our outreach strategies. And then I'll look at the community profiles for our project's target communities. And finally, I'll present data from the door-to-door campaign and provide comparisons with other types of outreach to help demonstrate the productivity of door-to-door outreach. And that will conclude the door-to-door presentation, and then we'll pause, take questions, and then move into our kiosk project. So I'll give some background on the use of kiosks, results from our kiosk project, and then I'll conclude by discussing some of the challenges and successes of using kiosks for outreach. And I have no relationships to disclose. So Helping Her Live is funded by the Avon Foundation for Women and was designed to address some findings regarding breast cancer incidence and mortality in Chicago. A few of these minority women are diagnosed at later stages of cancer than white women, and minority women, especially those of lower socioeconomic status, are least likely to get screened routinely. And these findings are captured in what we refer to as the graph. The graph displays black-white breast cancer mortality rates for the city of Chicago for the years 1981 to 2007. Here you can see in the early 1980s, breast cancer mortality rates in Chicago for white women were actually higher than for black women. Over time, the rates for white women decreased dramatically, but the rates for black women hardly changed at all. So in the early to mid-90s, the racial disparity became quite apparent, which likely stemmed from two major events in the US. First, in 93, the Mammography Quality Standards Act was passed, and mammography became more readily available to women. And second, treatment for breast cancer became more readily available in the 90s as well. So at the final time point of the graph, we see the death rate from breast cancer for black women was 62% higher than for white women. The next graph provides a look at breast cancer mortality in Chicago by race ethnicity for our target communities. North Lawndale is predominantly non-Hispanic black, and Westtown Humboldt Park, WTHP, is a mix of non-Hispanic white and Hispanic. So again, you see when compared to non-Hispanic whites, we see elevated mortality rates for non-Hispanic blacks as well as for Puerto Ricans. So with these findings in mind, the HHL team set out to design an intervention with the following goals: reduce disparities and improve overall breast health outcomes for all women in the Chicago communities of North Lawndale and Humboldt Park, educate, engage, and empower the women we serve so they can share their knowledge, and increase routine mammogram utilization and timely receipt of results, resolution of diagnostics, and access to treatment when needed. So our work towards these goals involves two primary activities. We do community outreach and client navigation. We really seek to reach women where they are in the community. And so in order to reach our target audience, we do several different types of outreach in the community. We conceive of these types of outreach as falling into two categories. We have active outreach, where our community health workers really actively seek to recruit women, and then we have sort of more passive outreach, where we sort of allow women to come to us. But during each type of contact with a woman, they're given the opportunity to fill out what we call a pink sheet, And this is where they provide demographic information and also request a service, whether they want a mammogram appointment or a mammogram reminder. They also can provide authorization for us to access their medical record if they choose. It's obviously not mandatory. So door-to-door is just one of our types of active outreach, and the kiosks, which I'll be presenting on second, are one type of our passive outreach. And then this is just a whole slew of our various types of outreach that we do on the HHL project. So because this portion of the presentation will focus on door-to-door, I'm going to give a little bit more detail about this type of outreach and what it entails. So the door-to-door campaign consists of staff visiting each home in our target area in an attempt to locate women in need of services. So a team of four community health workers divides into pairs, and they work their way down each street in shifts of 4 or 8 hours. Each pair works together, and so the pairs do their best to stay in each other's line of sight for safety purposes. So in order to track the efforts of the door-to-door campaign, the community health workers complete a form that corresponds to each household, each address, and they indicate the outcome. So that kind of provides the denominator. Each home has a form, and then we have various outcomes. So no answer, a vacant lot, an eligible woman, maybe someone refused, and so that sort of provides a numerator. And so again, when the pair encounters an eligible woman, she's asked to complete a pink sheet where she can request services, and then the team will contact her within a week of the completion of the pink sheet. So before I present the results of the door-to-door, I just want to talk a little bit about the evaluation metrics we use, which will help the results section make more sense. So our evaluation metrics allow us to make comparisons across all of our different types of outreach so that we can assess how well we're doing in reaching women and generating requests for services, and also allows us to evaluate which types of outreach are the most productive for us so we know what to continue spending our time on and what to take time away from. So some of the key concepts for our evaluation metrics: an attendee is any woman HHL staff spoke with during outreach. And then the contact is the completed pink sheet. So this outreach productivity is contacts divided by attendees. So that just gives us the percentage of attendees at each type of outreach event or activity who complete a pink sheet. So obviously we want high outreach productivity. We want every woman that we meet to be completing a pink sheet. And so a valid request is a pink sheet where the woman requested either a doctor's appointment or a mammogram reminder, and not a pink sheet where she requests that she doesn't need any help at this time, because that is an option on the pink sheet as well. So service demand is just the percentage of pink sheets that contain a valid request. So ideally we want high outreach productivity and high service demand. We want all the pink sheets that we get to be women requesting our services. Okay, so we'll take a quick look at the community profiles just to help situate ourselves and get an idea of where we're working. So Chicago, this is a map of the city of Chicago. It's divided into 77 officially designated community areas, and HHL targets two communities within Chicago. First is North Lawndale, which is where Mount Sinai Hospital and the Sinai Urban Health Institute are housed. And then the second is Humboldt Park, which is often informally divided into East and West Humboldt Park. So sometimes you'll hear me say we have two target communities, and sometimes I say three, because Humboldt Park is sort of two, but it's really technically only one. So the demographic characteristics of these two communities really reveal a lot about our target audience and the barriers they face. Overall, the two communities are characterized by low income, high rates of poverty and unemployment, and large percentages of minority population. So because we target our outreach efforts to these specific communities, we know that these are the characteristics of the women that we should be meeting when we do outreach. So one way in which we measure the effectiveness of our outreach efforts is just by examining the demographic characteristics of the women we meet. And so here we have the door-to-door demographics of the people we've met on door-to-door. So we have several criteria for our target audience. We want to meet women who are 40 and above, and 95% of the women we met on door-to-door were over 40, or 40 or older. We want to meet minority women, mainly Black and Hispanic. 63% of the women we met on door-to-door were Black, and 35% were Hispanic. We want to target women who are un- or underinsured. 82% of the women we met on door-to-door were un- or underinsured. And finally, we want to meet women who have never had a mammogram or have not had a mammogram within the last 2 years. About 40% of the women we met on door-to-door met this criteria. So when evaluating the success of door-to-door, these are obviously important points to consider. They help us determine whether or not we're meeting those women most in need. And clearly this was the case for the door-to-door 2011 campaign, but we have some other evaluation metrics that we consider as well. So this flowchart displays the outcome data for our door-to-door 2011 campaign. And this is all data for all two or three of the target communities. So I'm going to just walk through this flowchart, which will help demonstrate how we use the metrics that I discussed earlier to evaluate the door-to-door efforts. So for this time span, which was basically like late spring and early summer, this title should read through October 1st, not through May 31st. I apologize. So it really was for the whole summer campaign. So during the door-to-door campaign, HHL staff visited 3,831 homes. That's a lot of houses in Chicago. So 3,520 of these were occupied and 311 were not. So of the 3,520 occupied residences, 879 doors were answered. Of the 1,879 answered doors, 815 households contained eligible women who were given an opportunity to complete a pink sheet. And so from these 815 households, 352 pink sheets were completed. So we define outreach productivity as 43% here, which means 43% of the eligible women that we met completed a pink sheet. And then of the 352 pink sheets that were completed, 262 were valid requests. So service demand for door-to-door activities was 74%. And so this table just gives the times, or sorry, provides the summary of door-to-door efforts in all three of the target communities. So we can see outreach productivity was slightly higher in North Lawndale than in the other two communities, while service demand was highest in West Humboldt Park and quite low in East Humboldt Park. So in addition to measuring how productive an activity is, we also think it's important to assess how much time we're spending. So this next table provides the time spent in various outreach activities conducted over the past year and the hours per pink sheet, valid request, and mammogram. And I'll walk us through this table as well. So for each outreach activity that we do, we track the number of community health workers in attendance and the number of hours that they spent. So we're able to know the total number of outreach hours spent in an outreach activity. And so once we know how much time was spent, we're able to calculate the number of outreach hours per pink sheet, outreach hours per valid request, and outreach hours per completed mammogram. So based on these evaluation metrics, we can make comparisons across the different types of outreach. And so we can know which are the best activities for us to spend our time on. And what this table reveals is that for each of these three metrics, the time required is much greater for door-to-door than for any other type of outreach. For instance, while the other activities range from as little as 0.4 to 2.1 hours per pink sheet, door-to-door requires 2.9 hours per pink sheet. The differences get larger when we look at outreach hours needed to complete a valid request. Door-to-door requires nearly 4 hours to complete a valid request, while the other activities require a range of 0.6 to 2.2 hours. And then where the differences in productivity is most noticeable is in the outreach hours required to complete a mammogram. For door-to-door, nearly 18 outreach hours are required to secure a complete mammogram, while the other activities range from 1.1 to 6.9 hours per completed mammogram. So overall, based on our metrics for evaluating our outreach efforts, we conclude that door-to-door has comparatively low outreach productivity and service demand, and also it requires far more outreach time to generate a valid request or a completed mammogram. So one of the main reasons that door-to-door is so time-consuming is because it requires far more staff participation than other types of outreach, and that, again, is part of the need for teams of four community health workers to go out for them to feel safe. So one undeniable advantage of conducting a campaign like door-to-door is it goes a long way toward establishing a recognized presence in the community and also ensuring that no one in the target area slips through the cracks. We do meet a lot of women on door-to-door that we don't meet at any of our other types of outreach, women who aren't, you know, motivated to come to things like health fairs or places where we're doing table setups. So it has its advantages and it has its disadvantages, and I'd love to answer more questions. I have to kind of skip through a lot to fit the presentation in the allotted time, so if anyone has questions about door-to-door, I'm happy to answer them now. Yeah. The community areas? Well, so our grant is just funded to do work in Humboldt Park and North Lawndale, the two highlighted community areas. We have some other grants at the Sinai Urban Health Institute. We have grants for things like asthma, diabetes, and some of those grants do target those areas, but we do not target breast health services in those areas, unfortunately. I mean, we would love to, like, you know, get our model down to a T and then be like, hey, Avon, let's do all of Chicago. Well, not all of Chicago is in need, obviously, but clearly a ton more community areas than the ones that we can target are in need. No, they're not actually. Let's see if I can get up there. Yeah, pretty quickly. I think 26 and 27. Oh, no, yeah, they are. They definitely are low income and high minority populations in those communities. So we would love to. I mean, the whole service area around Mount Sinai Hospital is could definitely use the program that we have. Mm-hmm. Does anyone else have questions? Yeah.
How many outreach workers do you have, like, in that time frame going out?
How many do we have total, or how many do we send out?
How many do you send out?
So we always sent at least four people, and that was based on the request of the community health workers. They don't feel safe going out in teams smaller than that. And, I mean, this is in broad daylight, and, you know, it's not like we're sending them out after dark or, you know, it stays light out pretty late in the summer. But we, you know, obviously respected their wishes, and that was how they felt most comfortable doing it, was to be in two teams and sort of work down the streets, like just across the street from each other, so that they could always see each other and kind of be checking in with each other. Yeah.
So community health workers, is this all that they do, the breast health workers, or are they the ones that
So our community health workers, actually, they do the navigation aspect of this work as well. And so I know, you know, a lot of all programs kind of have it set up differently, where they some just do have people specifically designated for outreach and some have specific navigators. Our community health workers are also our navigators. So the women that they meet, they then end up navigating. I mean, if their caseload is too big, the woman might be assigned to a different community health worker. But a lot of times, they'll specifically come back with a pink sheet and say, you know, I want this woman. I want to navigate her. I met her. I talked to her. I want to be her person. So it is a lot, and especially in the summer when we were doing the door-to-door campaign, it was a lot for them. It was hot. They would go spend either 4 or 8 hours trudging through these neighborhoods all day, and you know, then they might have to come back to the office if they were on a 4-hour day and then do navigation for the rest of the day. And we were doing door-to-door, I think, 2 and sometimes 3 days a week. So it was a lot of effort, and that's, I think, kind of my point here is it can be a really great outreach strategy. It has some pretty strong advantages. I mean, I think it's really difficult to achieve this notion of sort of community engagement and getting your project known in a community, and this is a really good way to do it if you have the resources to do it. But it is incredibly time-consuming, and it's resource-intensive. So it's great if you can pull it off, and we were lucky to have the opportunity to do it. But ultimately, when we were faced with the decision to repeat it again in the summer of 2012, we decided that it just wasn't. We could see from our evaluation of our outreach that it was not, that there were other things we should invest our time in. Okay, does anybody else have questions on the door-to-door campaign?
Okay.
Okay, so now I'm going to talk about the use of computer kiosks to target disadvantaged populations. So in May 2011, the HHL program launched the My Pink Agenda kiosk project. We purchased 2 kiosks, which were active for about 16 months, and were moved to various community settings throughout our target area. So using computer kiosks, we hoped to reach more women in our target area with information about breast health and connect more women to breast health services through our community navigation program. And so the process and results of this endeavor will be presented here. So I'll start with some background. Why use computer kiosks? So for us, the idea of using computer kiosks to reach our target audience was based largely on the work of Matt Kreuter and his colleagues in St. Louis. This group has published a plethora of articles on the use of computer kiosks for breast cancer education, including the piece that we based our work on, which was use of computer kiosks for breast cancer education in 5 community settings. It was published in 2006 in Health Education and Behavior. So I'm just going to quickly summarize some of the main points taken directly from this article. Despite increased computer and internet access, African Americans and those with lower income and education are less likely to have computers, home computers. Groups with limited access are the same as those underserved by the healthcare system. And these groups express interest in gaining access but are experiencing barriers to access. So public computers can help reduce gaps in access. Kiosks placed in community settings can provide increased access. Kiosks are freestanding units that provide users with services or information. They're largely portable, interactive, and usually have a simplified user interface. Kiosk-like devices are routinely used by individuals from a wide range of SES backgrounds, and so this combination of user familiarity and public access makes kiosks attractive as a channel for disseminating health education in community settings. So in this paper, Kreuter et al. Discuss their reflections of U-Kiosk, which was an interactive computer program. It creates a tailored magazine about breast cancer and mammography. They placed the kiosk in 5 community settings in St. Louis from June 2003 to October 2004. So the team in the paper, they describe patterns of kiosk use and characteristics of kiosk users in the 5 community settings. So Kreuter's group selected community settings based on how well they met these 5 criteria. 1, providing access to large numbers of African American women across a wide range of age and SES. 2, having waiting time inherent to the setting. 3, having African American women and or health as a focus of the setting's activities. 4, finding published evidence of effective use of the setting for health promotion. And 5, receiving a majority recommendation from the community advisory board. So 5 community settings were ultimately selected as kiosk host sites. They chose beauty salons, churches, neighborhood health centers, laundromats, and social service agencies. After being in the field for 17 months, the project reported the following mean number of valid uses per kiosk day. In beauty salons, they had 4 uses per day. In churches, they had 7.6, neighborhood health centers, 8.1, laundromats, 9.8, and social service agencies, 6.8. So based on the relative success of Kreuter's kiosk project, we were interested in doing a similar kiosk project in Chicago. So with the help of Kreuter's staff at the Health Communication Research Laboratory at WashU, we designed an assessment, a tailored magazine, and a kiosk wrap. We ordered 2 kiosks and all the necessary internal parts, and we deployed the kiosks in various community settings on the west side of Chicago. Again, they line up with the map from the first presentation. So these are a couple pictures of the kiosks that we ordered for our project. And this is a screenshot of what the assessment looks like on the kiosk display. This is just the home page that is displaying when a user steps up. So the assessment was 25 questions available in both English and Spanish. You can see that here they just step up and either start in English or Spanish. There were 5 mammogram history questions, 9 mammogram barrier questions, 6 breast health knowledge questions, and 5 demographic questions. And then upon completion, a magazine, which is tailored to the user's responses, is printed. So this is the front of the magazine, which the kiosk prints. It folds down the center to make like the front page and the back page. And so the user's name can be printed on the front if they elect to have it printed. And then information on mammography needs based on the user's age and insurance status is printed there on the back. And this is the inside of the magazine. Again, it folds in half. And so on the right, a series of myths and facts about breast cancer is printed based on answers provided by the user. So if they got some of the questions in the assessment wrong, this would provide the correct answers. So with everything in place, we were ready to deploy our 2 kiosks to the community. So over the 18-month period during which the kiosks were active, we moved them to the Mount Sinai Hospital lobby, Rebano Church, Leamington Grocery Store, Walgreens Pharmacy, Lawndale Christian Health Center, Soap Opera Village Laundromat, Aqua Clean Laundromat, Association House, and Marillac Social Center. So the only type of community setting that we did not try, that Kreuter's group did, was beauty salons. But you may recall they reported the lowest mean valid kiosk use per day at beauty salons. So our results during the roughly 16-month period during which the kiosks were active in the field, they were touched 9,214 times. Now, of course, not all of these touches resulted in a valid use. So So in 4,353 cases, the first question, which requests the user's consent, was left blank. So we can toss those out. In another 1,133 cases, the user refused to provide consent. In the remaining 3,727 cases, the user did provide their consent. 774 of those users providing consent were under the age of 22, and so they were considered an invalid user. Our program does not target such young women, so we actually designed the kiosk to skip to the end when a user of that age, when someone entered a birth date that put them at under 22 years of age. So this leaves us with 2,953 valid users, but 1,328 of these women did not answer any questions beyond the date of birth. So we're left with a final valid use total of 1,625 women of age who completed at least one question beyond date of birth. So about half of the kiosk users were under 40, and about half were over 40. Recall that under 40 is 22 to 40, because women under 22 were invalid users. About half of kiosk users were Black, and about 30% were Hispanic. Only 13% of users had private insurance, 25% had no insurance, and about 50% had some form of public insurance. Just over half of users lived in our target area, and only about half of users over 40 had had a mammogram within the last 2 years, and a third of users over 40 had never had a mammogram. So these data kind of provide a profile of our kiosk users, and now we'll look at kiosk usage. The kiosks remained in one location for anywhere from 40 to 158 days. We initially, we wanted to keep the kiosks in a place for 4 to 6 weeks, and so sometimes it was less and sometimes it was quite a bit more. The valid number of kiosk uses ranged from a low of 19 to a high of 425. The valid use per kiosk day takes into account the fact that the kiosks were not in each location for the same amount of time, and so it allows us to compare kiosk use per day across locations. So the valid use per kiosk day reveals that overall our kiosks averaged about 2 hits per day, with a low of 0.5 at the church and a high of 3.4 at the Walgreens. So how does this compare with the data from Kreuter's work in St. Louis? Kreuter's kiosk averaged 4 hits per day at beauty salons. Again, we didn't put our kiosks in beauty salons, so we don't have comparable data. Kreuter's kiosk averaged 7.6 hits per day at churches. Our kiosk averaged 0.5. Kreuter's kiosk averaged 8.1 hits per day at neighborhood health centers, and our kiosk averaged between 1.8 and 3.4. Kreuter's kiosk averaged 9.8 hits per day at laundromats. Our kiosks averaged between 1.1 and 2.2. And Kreuter's kiosk averaged 6.8 hits per day at social service agencies. Our kiosks averaged between 0.9 and 1.2. So overall, while our kiosk averaged about 2 hits per day, Kreuter's kiosk averaged over 7 hits per day. One small difference in the valid use count is that we did not include women under 22 while Kreuter's group did. However, even if we had included women under 22, our usage would still only be 2.8 hits per day. So clearly, our kiosks did not experience the same level of productivity that Kreuter's kiosk did. So, you know, the kiosks didn't produce a lot of interest on their own, or at least not as much as we had anticipated. So before removing our kiosks from the field, we had a short phone conversation with Kreuter about why we might be experiencing such low productivity with our kiosk project. And Kreuter suggested that perhaps in the 7 years that had elapsed between the two projects, maybe a shift had occurred in the way people spend their idle time. Kreuter, when his kiosk was in the field, the majority of the people in our target population did not have a cell phone. And by the time we launched our kiosk project, cell phones have become a lot more common really among all populations. And so Kreuter suggested that maybe people were beginning to spend their idle time on cell phones. I chuckled in response to this because I could recall, I was the person that went around the kiosks and maintained them all of the time, and it was a lot. And everybody around me was always sitting there on their cell phone, and even sometimes people had unplugged our kiosk in order to plug in their cell phone charger. So it definitely made sense to me, the suggestion that people are spending their idle time differently. I think we can all, we all probably do it. You go and sit and have a cup of coffee and you get on your cell phone. So aside from the relatively low productivity, we also had one serious technical issue with the kiosks. I didn't get too far into it, but maybe you noticed on the picture of the kiosk, it has like an old school, like payphone looking thing attached to it. That phone was supposed to be able to connect the user to our project hotline, and I spent a lot of time and effort trying to get those phones to work, but we could not get a strong enough internet signal. We had wireless devices. We could never get them to work on the west side of Chicago. The reception is already really low, and when you put it inside of a metal box inside of a store that's made of brick and metal, it never worked. So that was one problem. The magazine that prints does have our hotline number on it. Very few people ever took that step to call our hotline to enroll for services. We did a few times try staffing the kiosk, but we still experienced fairly low use, and it was very time-consuming. We thought we might be better off just doing outreach without an expensive prop behind the community health worker. So in the end, we did reach 1,600 more women than we would have otherwise, but whether this was a cost-effective way of doing so seems unlikely. The kiosks were very expensive from startup to maintenance. Moving them around, we had to hire movers to move them because they're not a cheap machine. We had to check on them constantly, or I did. They required a lot of attention. You had to constantly make sure the kiosk was plugged in, that the program was launched, that the printer was working. The printers got really dusty in laundromats and would stop working after just a few days from all the dust. So that was a problem. So if everything had gone right with the kiosks, if we had reached more women and been able to connect them to the project hotline, perhaps it would have been worth it then. But as it stands, we were pretty disappointed with the experience we had with the kiosks, and we tend to see a lot more success in outreach just using community health workers, which is really our model. So I'm happy to take questions about the kiosks. Anyone has any? Go ahead. Sure. Right. Yeah, so, sure. So, when I was just summarizing all the points from Kreuter's article, that article was written like almost 10 years ago. And so all of that information about the digital divide was true at that time, and probably to some extent still is as far as home computers. But you're right, there are better ways to reach this target audience, and that was part of our conversation with Kreuter. He was like, oh, well, maybe you guys now should think about texting people or doing like an app, like how are people receiving information? So it's certainly something to think about moving forward. Obviously, it doesn't change the fact that we already put a ton of time and money into the kiosk project. Again, it's the same as what I say about the door-to-door campaign. I think we're lucky to have had the opportunity to try this out, and and not be bashful to tell people that we don't really think that it's working. So I do think that there are better ways to move forward, like with apps and texting now that cell phones are widely used. Yeah. Yeah. So the Croyders group designed a magazine, and we sort of used theirs as a template, and I think they took a lot of that into account. But we do a lot of literature of our own for the Helping Her Live project, and we also have several Spanish-speaking community health workers on staff, because a huge part of our target audience is Spanish-speaking. So we did definitely try to make the magazines a low literacy level, and also make sure that our Spanish was correct. Sure. If you want to grab a card from me after the other presenter, I actually have a stack of the magazines printed in my office that I now don't know what to do with. But also we have them electronically, like as a PDF. Did you have a question?
I just wanted to reiterate and commend you about sharing this information.
Yeah.
And spend our resources and our time and money trying to replicate something that might not work.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And I do, you know, I understand the importance of people being honest and upfront about what works and what doesn't. But, you know, I also want to caution that, like, just because it didn't work for us in Chicago, it doesn't mean that it won't work other places. I mean, it could even work in a different community area within Chicago. So, you know, I certainly don't want to imply that kiosks are a huge waste of time. Just, you know, you really have to think about what you're doing before you do it. And the same with door-to-door. Again, I think I wanted to emphasize that there are really some strong advantages to using a door-to-door approach, but only if you got a ton of money. Yeah.
So are you still planning on moving forward with
kiosks? We are sort of on hold with the kiosks right now. They're currently sitting in my coworker's office. I don't know what we'll do with them next. I will just say, you know, for people that are interested in doing something like a kiosk project, there was a presentation that I went to a few days ago. A guy had used kiosks, and they did, their kiosk was much more video and animation, and they had real people recorded telling stories about their experiences. And I started to wonder if that wouldn't be a little bit more compelling for people to want to take the next step to get a mammogram, to enroll in the project. So if we do decide to move forward, maybe we would do something like that.
I can share that in Jacobi, we're using the kiosk, but again, real people telling their stories, and it's more for HIV testing. It's huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah, I do. I mean, it seems like a much better idea than someone just answering a bunch of questions about myths and facts of breast cancer. If you can hear from people that you can identify with, I think it would be a lot more compelling. I think maybe we should just do one last question, and then I don't know if we're running out of time, but I've been up here for like an hour. Well, it can be low cost if your door-to-door staff are volunteers, for instance.
Well, but the problem with volunteers is that, you know, we have to secure our funds.
Yeah.
At the end of the year, and volunteers can't control.
Yeah.
So you have to have staff that you can control, and I'm from Florida.
Well, you can't always control your staff either, but.
Oh, I will.
Sure.
Florida communities are very isolated. There's no one around.
Yeah.
And so you need that
Sure.
So there is some expensive model bikes. I appreciate that information because I'm going to take it back for us to already, we're going to go in and do our best effort, but know that we have to change it up based on these factors.
Yeah. I just would say just think about how you're going to track the work that people are doing when they go door to door, because it's really important to get like a numerator and a denominator, like how many houses did we visit and what was the outcome at each of them. Okay, thank you all.
Thank you.